بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم الحمد لله رب العالمين صلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف اللهم أخرجني من ظلمات الوهم وأكرمني بنور الفهم اللهم افتح علينا أبواب رحمتك وانشر علينا خزائن علومك برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين إن شاء الله we are going to start أصول الفقه. I assume you have already had introduction to أصول الفقه, yes? So you know what is this science about. But just as a reminder, we know that Muslim scholars, in order to understand Islamic rulings, they had to develop few sciences. First of all, Arabic grammar, like sarf, like nahw, like balagha. They were all developed for the sake of understanding Quran and then hadith. But it is not enough just to know Arabic. There are many other issues when you want to interpret a text, when you want to understand whether, for example, this ayah or this hadith implies wujub or istihbab. Is it obligatory or it is recommended? Or, for example, when there are some texts which indicate that something is general, there are other texts which indicate that it is limited and specific. So you need some kind of treatment. And there are also cases that even we may not have any specific text. So gradually, ilmu usul al-fiqh was developed in order to draw Islamic rulings from the text or from the reason or from other methods. You know, our Sunni brothers, they have methods that we may not accept, you know, like qiyas, like istihsan, like masalih mursale, saddu dhara'i, fatwa dhara'i. These are the things that they use when there is no specific text and guidance to fill the gap. So all these issues are studied in ilm usul al-fiqh. Therefore, in the time of the Imams, Shia scholars started developing science of usul al-fiqh, but very much so in the time of Ghaybah. Because even in the time of Imam, still they were able to ask Imam. And Imam were giving them principles, you know, as we have had this, alayna ilqa'ul usul wa alaykum an tufarra'u. We give you the principles, you apply. But then, in the time of Ghaybah, it became much more complicated. So, Shia scholars like, you know, Sheikh Tusi, for example, have a very good book on usul al-fiqh. And then, in the time of Sheikh Ansari, rahmatullah alayh, there is a great advancement in ilm usul. And then, students of Sheikh Ansari and then our contemporary scholars. Now, ilm usul has become by itself a very sophisticated, well-developed discipline. In Darse Kharij, you know, if you want to have one whole, you know, course on usul al-fiqh, so the minimum is those who do it very, very, very fast, it's 5 years, 6 years. But some maraja take it, you know, 15 years if you want to do one course of usul al-fiqh. from the beginning up to the end. It's very now complicated and detailed. So what we are going, inshallah, to do is to study Ilm Usul al-Fiqh at an elementary level, so that inshallah after that you will have two more textbooks in this course that we have, you know, for the first degree. First we have this Mabade Usul al-Fiqh, then inshallah we will have an intermediate text which is very likely to be Al-Mujaz by Ayatollah Subhani, which is a textbook now in the Hawza, and then inshallah Usul al-Fiqh by the late Muzaffar. So there will be three texts on Usul al-Fiqh that inshallah you will study one after the other. So this is the introduction, and inshallah paves the way for the coming courses on Usul al-Fiqh. Many years ago, in London we had Hawza Imam Hussein. I don't know if you have heard. It was not very far from here. So we had Hawza Imam Hussein, and 1 year I was in London, 2000-2001, I was in London after I did my PhD. So I was 1 year in London. And I used to teach in the Hawza Akhlaq and Usul al-Fiqh. And in the college also I used to teach some subjects like methodology. So in that time in Hawza, I was asked to teach Mabade Usul al-Fiqh, the Arabic version. And some brothers, which you know now, they were studying at that time in Hawza. So the text was in Arabic, but I was teaching in English. Then I was asked to translate it into English. But when I wanted to translate to English, I was sure that I cannot translate it, you know, word by word or sentence by sentence. It needs some changes. So I had to make some changes. But the main structure, the main content is from the same book. So the credit goes to Sheikh Fazli Rahmatullah Alayh. But there are some changes also being made. So it's not translation, but... And then I made it into 12 lessons. So you can follow, you know, lesson by lesson. So what we are going to do is we are going to combine the Arabic and English so that gradually, inshallah, you would be able to read Arabic text. And also for Kalam, inshallah, we are going to use Arabic version of Baba Hadi Ash. So that, inshallah, from this semester, you will start reading Arabic text. The Arabic version, you must have got it from here. You have it in office. And the English version also I gave you. And if there are people who have not received it, inshallah, we bring more copies. Okay, now let's start with the first lesson. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We start with the definition of Ilm Usul al-Fiqh. By the way, those who want also to follow this in Arabic, I also teach this in Arabic on Sunday, so it's on website, Islamic Center. So our Arabic-speaking brothers and sisters also can follow the same thing. So now we have had two lectures there. It's almost going the same as this. Ilm Usul al-Fiqh is defined in this way. Ilmun yubhathu fi an qawa'id istinbat ahkam at-tashri' al-islami min adillatiha. The science in which qawa'id, rules for inferring Islamic rulings from their sources are studied. Okay? So the science in which the rules for inferring Islamic rulings from their sources are studied. Okay? So now we wanted to define one thing, but now we have three problems. What is qawa'id? What is ahkam? What is adillah? So now we have to explain these terms. What do we mean by qa'ida? Qa'ida, the plural is qawa'id, yeah? And ahkam, which is the ruling, and adilla, which is the plural for dalil. So we start with qawa'id, the rules. We mean by rule here a universal premise or a statement or proposition which can be applied to particular cases, instances, examples, so that you know what would be the ruling of those particular cases. For example, we have a rule, inshallah we will discuss this later, just as example, okay? We don't want to discuss the example now. The example is just here to help us understand the concept of rule. We have this rule, which will be discussed later. كُلُّ ظَاهِرٍ قُرْآنِ حُجَّةٍ أو ظَوَاهِرُ الْقُرْآنِ حُجَّةٍ. You know ظَاهِر? What is the...
Obvious.
No, yes, but here, when we say ظاهر القرآن, is opposite to what?
Batin.
No. No, here ظاهر is not opposite to batin. ظاهر is opposite to nas. And these two are two types of مبين. Later, inshallah, we will see. Every text is either مجمل or مبين. Mujmal means ambiguous, like mutashabih. Mubayyan means understandable, it's not ambiguous. Then, when it is mubayyan, it's understandable, it's clear. Either it is nas, and nas here means 100% clear. There is no other possibility in understanding, interpreting this text. Or it is zahir. Zahir is lower than Nas, but above Mutashabih. So it means that the text has one meaning, one reading of the text, which is not 100%, but it's so likely to be the meaning which is meant by the speaker that we don't pay attention to the alternative readings. Okay? Shall I repeat?
Yes. Yeah.
So, the text has a meaning which is not 100% clear, but it's so likely that that is what the speaker meant that makes us disregard alternative reading or readings. We call it Zahir. Yeah. So again, Zahir means it seems that this is the meaning, but a sim, in English, you know, sim is a very ambiguous term. But here means something that has reliable understanding, reliable interpretation, but not 100%. But still, uqala, the rational people who know that language assume that this is the meaning. Because this meaning is so probable. Okay, so powerful that if the speaker had not wanted us to understand in this way, he should have put some evidence to take us to another option. Okay? So, you know, usul is very good for, inshallah, making your mind, you know, work better. So you have to be very sharp when you have usul al-fiqh, you know. Did I tell you the story about that man who had a, you know, like cornmeal? So, and the horse, I told you? Okay. So, maybe some of you were not. So, a person had a cornmeal, you know, and there was a horse and had to move around to move the, what they call this?
The wheel.
The wheel, yes. So, this man realized that sometimes this horse just stops, doesn't move. So for example, he was going to the next room, coming back, nothing is done. So he realized that this horse is lazy. So he put a bell on the neck of the horse, so that from the next room he can understand. When the horse is moving, he can, you know, realize that he's moving. Otherwise, if there is no, you know, sound, he would go back and check. So then there was a talabe who told him, what about horse stopping and just moving the neck? So the man said, but he has not studied usul al-fiqh. It means that the horse's mind is still not very sophisticated. But when you study usul al-fiqh, then people ask you one question, then you have 10 options in your mind. They ask one simple question, but you cannot easily answer. It can be this, can be this, can be this, you know. Actually, one of the signs of a person's, you know, sophistication in understanding is that how many probabilities come to his mind. You know, we say, yo'arafu. Please remember this, you may be asked in the grave about this. Yo'arafu aqlu ar-rajul. Sometimes I want to encourage people, so I say, you know, maybe in the grave they ask you about this, but they will not ask. Yo'arafu aqlu ar-rajul bikathrat muhtamalati. Yu'rafu aqlu ar-rajul bikathrat muhtamalati. The intelligence of a person can be known by abundance of the probabilities that come to his mind. A person who is not very intelligent, when he hears something, automatically interprets it without any double checking, without thinking about different possibilities. But a person who is intelligent, when he receives a news, then says, I have to analyze this. Where does the source come? What are the other evidences, counter evidence, you know, so many things. Okay? So it's very difficult for Alim to make up his mind. You know, I remember my very first teacher of Hoza studies, Rahmatullah Alayhi, you know, he said that when I was young, I used to go to villages of Iraq for tabligh. And I used to read Tawzi al-Masail a lot. So people asked me questions about fiqh and I was giving them answer. And there was a mujtahid in the city of Iraq. He was Ayatollah, he was a mujtahid. And people were asking him questions, but he was not giving them the answer right away. He said, I had to check. So he said, some village people said, you know better than this Ayatollah. Not knowing that, still I'm a talibe, but you know, I only read the book, he's a mujtahid. He, when he asks a question, you know, he has to consider many things to give his fatwa. So sometimes people think that the person who gives answer right away is a sign of knowledge or experience. It can be, but sometimes also can be because this person is not very sophisticated. Yeah? Like a doctor who is expert and a doctor who is not expert. The doctor who is expert, maybe with the same symptoms, gives different possibilities. Another person quickly does. Anyway, Zahir is something that has a meaning or interpretation or reading which is not 100% clear to be meant by the speaker or the writer, whoever has produced that text, but the probability is so high that rational people would not consider the opposite probability or probabilities. Okay? For example, if I say I I owe this brother 1,000 pounds, or I owe this man 1,000 pounds. When people hear this, there can be different interpretations. One possibility is that I really, literally owe him 1,000 pounds, means 999 plus 1 pound. Another means that he has done a favor to me, that if I want to, you know, put that favor into figures, it's like I owe him 1,000 pounds. These are two possibilities. If a person in front of other people admits that he owes someone 1,000 pounds and later denies, and that person takes him to the court and judge asks him, have you said this, that you owe him 1,000 pounds? And he says, yes. Then the judge says, you must pay him. He says, no, I didn't mean I owe him really. I meant he has done, you know, some favor to me. The judge says, no. Although this is possible to be the meaning of this, but this possibility is so low that the people who are rational and speak that language disregard this possibility. In other words, there was a zahir in what you said. It was not nas, it was zahir. Is it clear? So we have to understand what is zahir of the text, and this is what we study in Usul al-Fiqh. Also, we have to understand whether zahir is hujjah or not. Again, this is also studied in Usul al-Fiqh. So, one of the examples of a rule that we study is whether zahir of Quran is hujjah or not. You may wonder, you say, Mawlana, why you are thinking zahir of Quran cannot be hujjah? And then you say whether it is hujjah or not. If zahir of every text of even ordinary people is hujjah, what about the Quran? You know, you may wonder, you know, why people need to discuss at all whether Quran zahir is hujjah or not. The answer is, this is not out of disrespect to the Quran. Some people, like Akhbariyun, actually they wanted to have too much respect to this extent that they made Quran something that we cannot understand. So they say, we cannot understand the Quran by ourselves. The only people who can understand the Quran are Prophet and Ahlul Bayt. إِنَّمَا يَعْرِفُ الْقُرْآنَ مَنْ خُوطِبَ بِهِ. The only people who understand the Quran are those who are addressed. And they mean the Prophet. And then the Prophet passed on the knowledge to the Ahlul Bayt. So, Akhbariyun had the idea that we cannot understand the Zahir Quran. It's not Hujjah for us. If it is Nas, yes. If it is Zahir, we have to refer to Hadith. Okay? So don't be surprised. It's not out of disrespect. It's out of them wanting to be too respectful to the Quran. Anyway, Zahir al-Quran is Hujjah. Okay? This is one example. Then, for example, in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أَقِيمُ الصَّلَاةِ. أَقِيمُ, according to ilm al-sarf, is صِغَةُ الْأَمْرِ. Okay? Is صِغَةُ الْأَمْرِ. وَآخِرُ دَعْوَانَا أَنِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ.